Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by ConvaTec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. My name's Rod Morrie, and as promised at the beginning of our last episode, this episode is going to be dedicated to a wrap-up of the Wounds Australia Conference at Darling Harbour a couple of weeks ago. I'm joined, as always, and as I indeed was at the conference, by my co-host and the brains behind this operation, Dr. Francis Henshaw. Dr. Fran, welcome. It's tempting to think that these conference things aren't really work, isn't it? And while they're not as formal as being at the office, they're a different kind of a thing, but I'd argue they actually are work in some ways, an almost important way, aren't they?
Well, I have to say, Rod, I slept for about 3 days after the Wounds Australia conference, so I'd like to contend that I did a fair bit of work there. I think we recorded 15 podcasts. One night I went to 3 different dinners, which is, well, that's quite a pleasure, actually, because you know how much I like eating. But
true.
But no, I think there was a fair bit of work done and a lot of information to absorb as well, which, you know, is quite difficult for my aging brain at times.
I don't know so much about that. It's a networking opportunity and it brings together people with minds from diversified areas of the field, doesn't it, who otherwise may not meet, and you get amazing things come out of that, don't you?
Absolutely. There were some real pearls there that we were able to uncover, and we were very fortunate to listen to a lot of these very interesting speakers and then get them ferried over to our podcast booth that was on the ConvaTec stall and continue the conversation.
Just on that, we're going to listen to a couple of clips and talk about a couple of things, but just on that, I was quite surprised and encouraged by how open and willing people were to be part of the podcast and share the information that they had come to the conference with.
So was I, Rod, actually. I was a bit sheepish. I mean, I can imagine what a teenage boy feels like now when he's inviting a girl out for a date, because I was like really worried that they might say no to me, but nobody did. So no, it was great that these people would so freely share their knowledge.
Yeah. Well, now that we're way out in left field with your analogy, Fran, let's have a listen to a couple of the clips that I've selected, and I'm sure that you've got some things as well. I thought one of the most interesting people was one of the first people we spoke to on day one, whose name I am terrible at getting. It's Dr.
Eden Najafi.
Thank you very much. It was fantastic. Here's one of the first things he said, and I want to get your reaction to this. Stand by.
My passion is that how we can leverage technology to actually empower patients to be part of a health ecosystem and also helping doctors to provide personalized care. The slogan that I'm using for my research and reminding to all of my graduate students is that we can manage what we can measure.
I love that.
You did love that, Fran. Why do you love it?
Well, I think that one of the real buzz things at the moment in healthcare is personalized care. And what we know is that when someone has, you know, a complicated condition like diabetes, it affects different people in different ways and they need different types of treatment, and the same when they get a wound. And I think that now we've realized that it isn't a one size fits all. And I think that personalized care has come to the forefront, which is tailoring a package for each individual person. And I think key to that is actually measuring and consistently evaluating what we're doing. And, you know, people at ConvaTec always laugh at me in meetings because I always say if it wasn't measured, it didn't happen. And I think to a degree that is true, because you can't really keep changing and reevaluating and improving patient care if you're not measuring the results of what you're actually doing. So I think he's very inspired in what he says there, Dr. Eden Najafi, who's, by the way, one of the preeminent people in the diabetic foot.
What a mind he had. And he had some really amazing stuff to say. Now, not much good has come out of the pandemic. I've picked two different quotes from Najafi because I thought he was such an interesting guy. Here's one that I thought was interesting. It's a topic we've touched on before, but here's what he had to say about the pandemic and what the fallout for that might be for medicine.
Actually, in our team, we are working on telemedicine concept, that through telemedicine, we can identify frailty, we can extract some metrics just by simple image processing, and then making a timely referral for a patient who needs to go to a vascular surgery or who need to go to more advanced care, or the patient who can receive the care at their own home. And that might be what we can see after the pandemic for emerging of technology and addressing some of the challenges that you have today.
This is really interesting stuff, isn't it, Fran? The notion that people who otherwise might turn up at the hospital thinking that there was something bad, wrong, who maybe aren't, the notion that you can have effective medical treatment at home. We're not saying we're there yet. It's not the nirvana, but I was very encouraged by some of the things that the professor had to say about that.
Yeah, look, it was really quite amazing, his insight. And, you know, I think he was very clear about this concept as well of frailty. And, you know, for example, people think that you get wounds because you get old and it's just part of the aging process. But you can actually prevent frailty by heading it off at the pass, by keeping people active and engaged in their lives. And so I think what he was talking about is this composite thing of offering them healthcare at the right time and perhaps earlier than they would usually seek it. So they don't present to a high-risk foot clinic with a catastrophic ulcer because it's been looked at and the risk factors have been mitigated earlier in the piece. And I think that, you know, with the pandemic, what he's saying is that we really had to leverage all these technologies very quickly, and perhaps it's actually done us a favour downstream.
The resources that saves in human time and commitment and face-to-face and travel time and all of those things can be much better used elsewhere, can't they? It streamlines the system in a way that possibly we wouldn't have thought of for another 10 or 15 years had it not been for the pandemic. And that's really exciting. He was talking about some amazing stuff, Fran. And we've talked about the phone and the potential for the phone. He was talking about socks that are hooked up to the phone that can measure things like gait length, people's balance, and as people are aging, and these warning signs before you even get the wound that, okay, we need to look at this, your balance isn't great. It was really quite extraordinary, I thought, and exciting stuff.
Yeah, he really is at the cutting edge.
Yeah, no question about that. Now, another one of my favourite guests that we had over the three, I haven't let you pick any because I figured I'd get all the clips out, was a Convatec staffer. I was a bit surprised at this. Dan Metcalf, who had an extraordinary tale to tell. And we'll probably, if we don't replay the episode we recorded with him at Darling Harbour, we'll certainly get him back on the podcast at some point to tell that story. Short version, he had a mystery bite on his leg, which developed into a really quite serious wound. In fact, a really serious wound. There were fears for his life. I've got a little clip from here from Dan. What I was most interested in was this development of new wound dressings and what it can mean in the broad context, both for the patient and for systems.
There was amazement of how quickly things turned around in my favour, and almost a bit, a little embarrassment, I would say, because they really didn't know what they were doing with my management of my wound until they was basically shown what to do by a Convatec nurse. Now, what's interesting is after the event, I decided to publish my own case study in a journal. Not to complain or anything about the service, but to reflect on practice and to hopefully give others food for thought, and we've had some great feedback since from nurses who said this is really fascinating to learn that, and it made them realise that sometimes a little investment in a good product with some good care can save potentially thousands of pounds and also improve the life of the patient. And that's what it all boils down to. It's the patient.
Exactly.
Cash is king, of course, but it's about these patients who are struggling for years. I struggled for a few weeks, right? But some of these patients have wounds for years, and they can be kick-started onto healing with good products like ours.
So remind me the product that Dan was talking about, which he himself developed. It's one of the most amazing stories.
This is where it's almost like one of those doctor becomes a patient stories. So Dan's got a PhD and he's a microbiologist, and he helped to develop this anti-biofilm dressing. So it's a dressing that acts on biofilm, which is this bacteria that gets into wounds and is very, very tenacious and very hard to get rid of. And it's called Aquacel AG Plus Extra. So, you know, he happily helped in the R&D of this product, and then he ended up with really bad wound on his shin. It all broke out, became blistered. He ended up in hospital for a couple of weeks, and they were treating it with various products, lots of antibiotics, but he wasn't getting any better, and they were looking at having to do a massive excision, which would have left him very disfigured. And someone brought him into the hospital, the Aquacel AG Plus Extra. They slapped it on, worked like an absolute treat. So one of the things I remember us saying to him is, why didn't you try it sooner? And I think what he said is he was so kind of into the patient journey and in the hospital system that he just, you know, was almost like a blind spot. And I think that we're all guilty of that, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It does point to something. Whilst an amazing product, as you say, and all those things, but this notion that, and it always strikes me in this particular area of medicine, because I don't understand any other areas of medicine, the product will be more expensive to start, but what it saves in money, time, and again, resources that can then be invested elsewhere, you almost can't calculate in some ways, can you, when you add in the improved outcomes for the patient as well?
Exactly, because it's very difficult to try and put numbers on these things. And I had a PhD student recently who was looking at the burden of diabetes-related foot ulcers in New South Wales. And you try and look at the intangible costs, which is things like time off work or time for a carer to take you to an appointment. And it's very hard to calculate all those things because they're very personalized to each person who has a foot ulcer, and it's not generalizable. So I think we often miss out on the cost benefit of dressings because we don't fully understand, firstly, how much longer healing trajectories are when we have the wrong dressing in place, and secondly, all these other costs that we don't necessarily put a dollar value on when we're exploring these concepts.
The way I've heard it that always makes the most sense to me is there's a significant difference, Fran, between price and value. And it's true, isn't it?
speaking like an economist now, aren't you?
I can't remember who told me that. It was somebody many, many, many years ago. But it does make the point, doesn't it? There really is a difference between price and value. And spending 10% more on a particular wound dressing that gets an outcome of that is going to save you a whole lot more.
Absolutely. Lot more. And when you talk to Dan, you know, he's kind of a very strong, stoic kind of a bloke, you know, a kind of knockabout bloke, yep, who, you know, likes to watch his football and all this kind of stuff. And he was actually really scared that he was going to
lose his leg,
lose part of his leg at least. And, you know, I think that he said that it had a massive impact on his family, his wife, his son. We're all, you know, terrified for what the future might hold for him. And you can't put a price on that either, can you?
No, that's right. Absolutely a trauma. Although I think one of the things you said to Dan, which really sort of stuck with me, was, and you can see how this can happen. Because of the infection and the way things went, suddenly the imperative became making sure Dan stayed alive. And the wound can be a little bit forgotten in all of that, can't it? Even though it's the cause of it all, now the attention turns to other things and failing organs and those sorts of things.
And you see this time and time again. You know, they were trying to find this holy grail with Dan. They were testing him for diabetes. They were looking at all these blood markers. And I've seen this happen before. I remember having a patient who came back with a big leg ulcer, and he'd been to Africa. So they were testing him for all of these, you know, really obscure tropical diseases, and he just had a venous leg ulcer. And I think that sometimes we do get blindsided when we're confronted by things that are not usual. And, you know, a bloke of Dan's age, it would not be usual for him to present to a hospital with a big, hot, red leg with a hole in it. They're looking for something that is probably beyond what they need to look at. And at the same time, the thing they need to look at, which is the hole in the leg, they were rather neglecting.
Staring them right in the face. I think a lot of lessons learned, and the point that Dan was making about that was that for the doctors and the medicons, for everybody involved, some really important lessons learned with that experience. We were very, very lucky to actually, we'll come to Fiona Wood in a moment. We were really lucky to chat with her. But one of the other people that I was super impressed with, who I'd never heard of, was Nikki, who surname I can't remember.
Prescott.
There you go. And I don't think I could pronounce it. Anyway, I've got to play a quick clip from Nikki, and you can tell us what she came to talk about, because it seems so simple, makes so much sense, and yet, like we've just spoken about, perhaps is a bit of a blind spot.
And it surprises me that it's a theme, because wound hygiene is a natural thing for podiatrists to be doing. We clean the wound, we debride the wound, we check the edges to allow wound healing. It's a hygienic process. It's just the same as brushing your teeth every day, the same as hand hygiene, the same as personal hygiene. That's what we have to do to the wounds. Otherwise, it's not going to be clean.
This is sort of something that I think ConvaTec kind of formalised in there. This is all sort of common sense stuff, what Nikki's talking about there, but ConvaTec, and it was on the wall in the booth where we were sort of broadcasting from, this four-step processes of wound hygiene. Why is wound hygiene so important, Fran? And is it another case, like we just spoke about, of something that's kind of so simple, we tend to overlook it, looking for something more complicated?
Well, Rod, I'll just give you the background on wound hygiene. So in 2019, ConvaTec convened a panel of experts. They locked them away in a hotel and said to them, why don't wounds heal and what can we do about it? And the experts came up with this theory and concept that biofilm is in most hard-to-heal wounds. There's been reviews that have done that would suggest that at least 75% of wounds that are long-term have got this biofilm, which is this tenacious collection of bacteria that nothing much can shift, and that they need to have a very systematic approach. And they came up with these four steps. And the good thing about the four steps is you can do them no matter your skill level. So first of all is cleansing. So if all you've got is some water and a bit of gauze, then you can do it with that. If you're in some posh clinic, you might have something like pulsatile lavage. The next one is debridement. And then there's wound refashioning, which is paying attention to the edges. And then finally, putting a dressing on. So they're the four steps. And the reason we got Nikki Frescos in to talk about this is that she is our new wound hygiene ambassador, along with Terry Swanson, who contributed to the original wound hygiene document. So we're in the process. And as we speak, I'm about to hop on a plane to Paris. It sounds very exotic, doesn't it?
It does.
We're actually refreshing wound hygiene. And we're going to see what the next steps for wound hygiene are, because it's been so well adopted in so many countries. And it's a very simple way to signpost people of how to perform good wound care.
Yeah, they're all common sense. Is this as much a preventive thing as anything, Fred? Can we stop the biofilm forming if we undertake good wound hygiene early?
Well, I think that is a possibility, yeah. I think that if we get a fresh wound and keep it very clean, then we can probably stop a biofilm forming. And if we can clean a wound that has got biofilm in it, we can keep the biofilm under control. And I guess, you know, we have this new dressing called Aquacel AG Plus Extra, which also helps to keep biofilm under control. So, you know, if you really suspect that biofilm's your problem, you probably need to do your four steps of wound hygiene, and then you can kind of extend that out by putting a dressing on that's also going to work on getting rid of this biofilm.
They're surprisingly fascinating things, these wounds, I've got to admit. Fran, much more interesting than I thought they were going to be when we first started. Last one from me, Professor Fiona Wood, former Australian of the Year, probably the best-known burn surgeon in the world, I would imagine, does some extraordinary work. And I was expecting we'd have some extraordinarily complicated discussion with her that I wouldn't be able to keep up with. We didn't. Have a listen.
I think there are four things we all as a society should be teaching our kids before they leave school: how to start the heart, secure the airway, stop the bleeding, and cool the burn. You know, simple things, basic first aid that can actually change lives.
Yeah. For somebody who works and does extraordinarily complex things and invents extraordinarily complex processes, I thought Fiona had such simple, sensible messages. And again, it's about this: get the early treatment right, and it makes an enormous difference to outcomes down the track.
Yeah, Professor Fiona Wood is an absolute powerhouse. I was talking to her in Perth and we geeked on about science, and she is phenomenally clever. The way her mind works, the way that she is able to get these amazing research ideas off the ground, and the tireless work she does for her foundation are, you know, things that are really a mark of the woman. But what I think makes her so exceptional is that she's a really ordinary person when you talk to her, and she can communicate these messages very simply. You can imagine her going to talk to a kindergarten class as much as you could imagine her talking to, you know, people at the Nobel Prize conference. She can shift gears, and it's rare that, you know.
I was a bit nervous talking to you. I don't get nervous often, but she is of such stature. I was a bit nervous, but you're right. Within a couple of minutes, she just felt like you were at home. She told something not funny, but somewhat amusing. This is the last clip I'm going to play, and then we're going to talk about a couple of the people that you were particularly impressed with.
So we're not putting egg yolk, milk, butter,
no toothpaste, or toothpaste,
or anything like that. I bet you've seen it all, have you?
Also, many things. And one recent one was a nappy cream that actually really went hard.
Oh, goodness.
And so there was a little bit of a general anaesthetic required to take the nappy cream off the burn of that child. So you've got to be careful. You know, you really, there's no substitute for clean running water.
It's not funny, Fran, but there are a lot of old wives' tales, aren't there, about burns and things that you should put on them. And it can be really damaging. That's having to have general anaesthetic to get off nappy cream that someone had put on a burn. That's an awful thing for a child to go through.
Terrible, isn't it? And I think you quite like old wives' tales, don't you, Roger? You have a bit of a morbid fascination with them.
You've got DeBribe and I've got old wives' tales of what people put on their wounds.
But I think that, yeah, it's one of those things that it's really important to use opportunities like this to get people like Fiona, who are very high profile, to actually dispel these myths. Mm. And, you know, it's water is what you put on a burn.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more to it.
No.
And, you know, we heard that straight from the horse's mouth, which is really important.
Indeed. Fran, that was fantastic. The conference was enjoyable, been fantastic to wrap it up. I know you're off to another one in Paris, so we'll have some more to talk about when you get back. Thanks for taking some time today in what is a very busy time for you. But it was really good to chat again.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Rod, and thanks for finding those little clips for us, because I really didn't have to.
That's okay. And that's it for this episode of The Wound Doctors. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to do it all again here at The Wound Doctors.